What if you had the resources you needed for your mental health right at your fingertips? Imagine a world where our mental well-being is prioritized just like our physical health, and where we have access to the tools and support we need. That's exactly what the Make Mental Health Matter show is all about. Join Kelly Melissa Reinhart, a true warrior for mental health, founder of Make Mental Health Matter nonprofit, author, and wellness coach. This show is your gateway to breaking down the stigma surrounding mental health. Tune in for enlightening conversations, expert insights, and empowering stories that will not only increase awareness, but also provide education about mental health. It's time to have those hard conversations, prioritize your well-being, and make your mental health matter. Your mental wellness journey starts here.
Welcome to another episode of Make Mental Health Matter. I am your host, Kelly Melissa Reinhart, and I am super excited for you to be here watching this episode, as with all the other episodes. But my special guest tonight, I have been on her show, and now she's coming on my show, and I'm just very excited. But as we start the show, you may have watched last week, and we had some technical difficulties at the beginning of the video, but we're making sure that we don't have those anymore. And if you happen to be listening on the radio, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So those of you that happen to watch the episodes, thank you so much for tuning in. Or if you happen to listen, I know that is a fun way also, now that we are on E360 TV and Dream Vision 7 Radio, we get a chance to reach more people. And the whole point of the Make Mental Health Matter show is to bring professionals or advocates of mental health or those with lived experience. And if you've been watching for some time or listening, you know that most of my guests that I bring, they have a story. They have a reason why they do what they do. And my guest tonight is in the same boat also. She has her story, and I am really excited for you to meet her and her to share her story with all of you, because the whole point is when we tell stories and we make those connections with others, then we know that we're not so alone in this thing that we call life, because loneliness right now is at an all-time peak. And interestingly enough, even though we're in the technology world and there is lots of ways to connect, we're actually feeling even more alone these days, which is really interesting. So the way that we can help people not feel so alone, or that I've found at least via the show, is to bring guests on here that can share their story, and they can show you that you're not alone no matter what you're going through. Also giving you some tools and some tips and some tricks and maybe just some advice that you can go throughout this life utilizing. So without further ado, let me read my bio. So Dr. Christy, and I totally am just going to use Dr. B, is a distinguished psychiatric nurse practitioner with over two decades of dedicated expertise. Her journey into the world of healthcare began as an Army medic, setting the foundation for a career defined by compassion and unwavering commitment. A pivotal point in her educational journey led her to Florida International University, where she earned a master's degree in psychiatric nursing with a passion for elevating the standards of mental health care. Christy pursued a doctorate in healthcare education, solidifying her position as a thought leader in the field. So her groundbreaking work culminated in the establishment of the pioneering Mentally Strong Clinic in a vibrant community of Colorado Springs, Colorado. Here she harnessed her extensive experience and visionary approach to mental health, transforming the lives of countless individuals. And I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about her story and what she does specifically. So welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm like, I'm going to try the last name and then I'm not going to.
It's Dr. B. It's too many syllables for sure.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And I am super excited for you to be on my show. Mm-hmm. I know I just read your bio, but tell the audience a little bit about your story.
Yeah. Well, I always like to say that my experience is really more my personal experience rather than the initials behind my name. So I've been in clinical practice over 20 years, so I can see it from both sides, but I have navigated some pretty significant grief and trauma. I have lost 3 children over the course of 17 years, one with a catastrophic illness that we were constantly fearful of his death. And just being a mother, and I'm still standing and having lost 3 children, I know that I have to share how I did it. Like, it's not just the professional experience. It's how I actually practically did it throughout that time. And I've suffered from depression, PTSD, multiple mental health challenges, but I never gave up. And I help thousands of people, and I am continuing to help myself.
Well, I know we'll go more into your story also. Yeah. But I know when I had the honor of sharing the stage with you at a community event, that we were just having an open conversation about mental health. And then I learned more about your practice and Mentally Strong and what you do there. I was just blown away by what you do. And I love that you said that it's really your experience. That's where the story comes from. So could you share a little bit more detail about your losses?
Well, and I talk about depression as a major symptom that a lot of people experience. And, you know, I've suffered on and off from depression symptoms since, you know, adolescence. And I think a lot of young women do go through that. And so, you know, my tagline is often, I was depressed before I had a reason to be depressed. And now I have multiple reasons. And, you know, there's so many factors in the symptoms of depression, not just, you know, this DSM that we always refer to and these clinical symptoms. You know, some of it can just be intense grief. I remember I adopted 5 children, had 2 biological children, and had been married a couple years, and really just felt like I was in a really good place. I had a really good husband, a really good job. Like, my external environment was in a good place. And, you know, hence adopting 5 children and thinking, you know, I've got this. I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner. My husband had a doctorate in special education. But the children that we adopted actually had PTSD, trauma, reactive attachment. They were older. They were 7, 8, and 10 when we adopted them. And so they came with some pretty significant trauma. And I would often say to them, you're safe now. Like, yes, you've been in these foster homes, you've been in your biological family's homes, you've been abused, but you are now safe. And there was specifically a 3-child sibling group that we had adopted that had been together since birth in multiple family homes, had been physically and sexually abused in the foster care system. And here I am telling them that they're safe. And July 5th, 2005, the oldest of that 3-child sibling group, Johnny, died in a drowning accident. And it was only about 14 months after the legal adoption. And he was literally just coming out of his shell. And we were on a family vacation in Kentucky. These are city kids, right? They were born and raised in Miami. They thought, if I can swim in a pool, I can swim in a river. And I had told him to wear a life jacket, but he was with a lot of other young boys, and there was adults there and everything. But he was swimming across the river and went under and just never came up. And that is the first grief. And if that was just the only one, right? Like, but I remember, I think I handled that grief like everyone handles grief, like especially people that have children to raise. Like, you can't just stop and, you know, feel all that pain. And I focused on his biological sisters, like, and I felt tremendous guilt. Like, I had lied to them. Like, I had promised to keep them safe, that they were in a safe home, and now they've lost their brother. And that was a very difficult time, but the grief was so different. And I, as I'm producing a grief documentary now, and people ask me, like, was there a difference between an adopted child and the biological child? And yes, there was. Like, let's not, you know, sugarcoat that. However, the pain at the time was as intense as losing a child, any child. And, but it felt more like guilt for me. Like, that's what was actually coming to the surface, right? Because, you know, I was just getting to know him, and I had promised him and his sisters, you know, this safe environment. And so, and then we didn't really have time. Like a lot of mothers who have lost a child, they have other children to raise. They can't just stop and be a grieving mother. And we don't really even have a culture that tells us how to grieve. And unfortunately, now I'm like an expert in grief. You know, I don't know, you know, if you want me to just keep going through the story, but yeah, that first loss was about 17. Oh, it was 2005, so almost 20 years ago. Now that I'm grieving the loss of my other children, I'm realizing how it was different and how I didn't stop and actually grieve. And I often have grieving mothers contacting me like, I can't do this. I can't mother my other children. You know, how do I do this? And so I work with people on, like, how do you actually function in extreme stress?
Yeah, I thank you for sharing that part of it. And I think what you said is really important for anyone listening. Because if you do have other children and you lose one child, you can't just stop as a mom. And I know, and that's why, like, you and I feel like are so connected even when we met. I had my daughter when I was young. I was 16, but I still had to go through the grief and loss process because I placed her for adoption. And it feels different, right? It's like this different type of grief. It's not necessarily... well, you said it's more guilt, like that's how you were feeling. And I guess in a way, I don't know if I was feeling necessarily guilty. I was just, it was such a different dynamic, although she's still alive, but I still had to go through that same process. But I think it's also letting people know that you can keep going, and you also will probably have all these emotions. There's no steps. Yeah. You're not going to be like this. And I know you and I have talked about that before, but there's no.
I talk about that in my Grieve with Purpose book. It's a workbook. And, you know, I studied all of the different grief theories, and, you know, it would really upset me, this, you know, one that everyone talks about, this five stages, as if, you know, there are little steps and you complete it. And there's a couple other grief theories that are, you know, presented like steps. And I can tell you, the people that had those did not lose a child or a husband, or like that was more of normal grief. You know, you may lose your mother, you lose your grandmother, you lose a pet. Like there's an expectation of the way in which you will lose people. Mm-hmm. And grief is so different when it comes to a child, for a couple of reasons. There's two grief theories that really stood out for me. One was attachment theory, mm-hmm. which really talks about attachment. So it's not, doesn't have to be blood, right? But how much time are you spending with that person? So a husband and wife that work together, did life together, like that attachment bond is, you know, greater than, you know, maybe even, you know, someone in your family that you don't spend a lot of time with, right? But it also talks about the about biological attachment and how a mother's attachment to a child is more than any other attachment for biological reasons, right? That that child came from the mother biologically, but also like if you breastfed, you had a year of oxytocin being released every day, mm-hmm. which is a bonding hormone. You know, for the mother, that the there's pieces of the placenta that are still in the body and eternally, right? And so there's, it kind of gave me a little bit of validation to how hard it was losing Reggie and Maya, because they are, they were physically a part of me. That that attachment theory was one that really stuck with me as a grieving mom.
Yeah, that's, I, when you said that, I mean, I love that you just explain the two different theories, and it totally makes 100% sense. And I would love for you to share the rest of your story. We're going to go to a quick sponsored break right now, just because I think it's a good stomping point, and then we'll come back and share the rest of your story too. So we'll be right back.
It's time to make mental health matter. BCC bridges the gap by educating people to support those who are facing a mental health challenge. We aim to ACE, increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education. To empower people and get educated and speak out about mental health and suicide so that we break down the stigma and start saving lives. Let's stop the stigma and normalize the conversation about mental health and suicide through educational classes and community events to reach 1 million people by 2030. And you can help. Go to bccevolution.org. Stay connected. Be a part of our community. Go to bccevolution.org now or email us support@bccevolution.org and make mental health matter.
What if you could transform your mental health journey with just one question? Have you ever wondered what it would be like to prioritize your mental well-being like never before? Well, now's your chance. Introducing Make Mental Health Matter, the show that's changing the conversation about mental wellness. Join us every Monday on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time as we delve into insightful discussions, expert advice, and inspiring stories. Hosted by Kelly Melissa Reinhardt, a warrior for mental health, this show is your guide to breaking down the stigma surrounding mental health and discovering valuable resources to enhance your well-being. So, are you ready to take charge of your mental health journey? Tune in and let's make mental health matter together.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to dreamvision7radio.com.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
Make Mental Health Matter. Support BCEvolution.org, a nonprofit organization in Aurora, Colorado, and assist by donating, volunteering, or shopping our merch. Either way helps us develop programs and events, help us increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education. Become a mental health warrior and find out why it matters. Go to BCCEvolution.org now or email us support@BCCEvolution.org and make mental health matter.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And like that, we're back.
We're back.
Yes. So if you happen to be just joining us, thank you so much for watching the Make Mental Health Matter show. I have my special guest, Dr. B, and we are really diving into her story of the loss of not one, not two, but three children. And she just shared the story of her adopted son who passed. And then I would love for you to share, also talking about the attachment theory and how grief, that was one of the theories that really resonated with you, biological, and how it's so different when you lose a child or somebody that you're really, really close to. And I know it's speaking to me, you know my story about losing my sister. And she was that one person that I spent the most time with. So when you said that, that really resonated with me. So I would love for you to share the story about the loss of your other children.
Well, about a year after Johnny passed, my biological son, Reggie, started having catastrophic epilepsy. So he would have multiple seizures. We would take him to the doctor, that they would start seizure meds. They would do absolutely nothing. Like, they could not stop these seizures. And this started in 2006, and he was 6 years old. And it actually took them 3 years of testing and multiple doctors. I went to Canada. I went to NYU in New York when I lived in Miami, trying to find, like, why was this kid seizing so much? And there were some changes in his brain, like MRIs and stuff. But it wasn't clear whether, like, this is a genetic thing, whether something was happening in his brain. And so we basically were in fight or flight. We didn't get time to grieve the loss of Johnny before Reggie became sick. And so here I am, mother, like, you will do anything to save your child, right? And I'm a nurse practitioner, and so I'm also a psychiatric nurse practitioner, but psychiatry and neurology are very close. And so I'm, like, diving into the study of neurology and trying to figure out what is going on with my child. And every time I go to a doctor, I feel like they didn't really know what they were talking about. Like, it was like, oh, well, you know, some kids with seizures have a developmental delay or you know, mental retardation. And I'm like, no, he was born normal. Like, now he's 7, 8 years old and he's talking like a 3-year old. And they're like, well, sometimes that happens in epilepsy. And I knew it was more than epilepsy, but I couldn't figure out what it was. And so I would just take him to different doctors. And finally, we're in the hospital one day. And the next morning, after a series of multiple seizures, like 12 in a row, needing, you know, oxygen and things like that. So we're in the Children's Hospital in Miami, And they call in the geneticist who has seen him a couple times before. But people don't realize that genetics is not just you take one test and they can know your genes. Like, this is still an evolving field. And so she walks in and she says, well, I'm going to do this thing like an ataxic panel, which would look for like a movement disorder, not a seizure disorder. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, he's just walking funny because he just had multiple seizures. Okay, well, my son ended up being diagnosed with the most rare movement disorder called DRPLA. And as soon as she told me what it was, I'm having to Google it, right? Because it's actually like dentatorubral atrophy. So I can't even spell that. So I'm typing in the DRPLA into the web browser, and I'm reading through it, and it comes out autosomal dominant, which as a nurse practitioner, I know that that means me or my husband have it. Like, there's no way for him to get it without coming from one of us. And so they tested the whole family. At this time, my other biological child was 1 year younger than my son, never had a seizure, completely normal. So, and you always have a choice of whether you test your children. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, go ahead and test her to take that off my shoulders, that, you know, because she's going to be negative. Like, she's fine. Well, not only was my husband positive, but my biological daughter, Maya, was positive as well, although she was not sick yet. So, huge blow. So when we talk about grief, grief is not just when the person dies. It's like all of these events leading up to their death also were elements of grief, you know? So now, but then I, you know, then we kept thinking, well, my daughter is like my husband. She's going to live into adulthood and just not exhibit symptoms. But she started having seizures at age 12. And once she started having seizures, she stopped developing. And so when she passed away at age 21, she was still like a 12-year-old. And so the same thing happened to Reggie. His seizure started at 6, and he did not develop past that age, even regressed a little bit. And so, and this is what brought us to Colorado. So I don't know if anybody remembers, there was a big movement back in 2013 of special needs families coming here for Charlotte's Web. So Charlotte's Web was this non-psychoactive, you can now get it in every state, but back then you could only get it here, and definitely for children, you could only get it here legally. So we moved our whole family out here to Colorado for cannabis. We were in a couple CNN specials and People Magazine, really believing like this is it. We're gonna save Reggie's life. And that was in 2013. And he just kept getting worse. Like, nothing could stop his seizures. And so we have this young son who was vibrant and loved to play, could ride a bike, could swim, now being G-tube fed in a wheelchair, unable to speak anymore by that time. And he ended up passing away in 2016. And I remember when that happened, at this time, Maya's having seizures, but they're well controlled. So she, unlike him, we would start a medication and she wouldn't have seizures for a long time. So although she was special and she had seizures, she was otherwise healthy. So we had no indication that she was going to pass. Mm-hmm. But in Reggie's passing, I knew that I had to share my how. Like, you know, I'm a big proponent of cognitive behavioral therapy. Like, you have to change the way you think to change your mood and your behavior. And I felt like there was a big disconnect with kind of self-development, self-help books, and, you know, actual psychology. And I really feel like I've been able to bring those things together in a practical sense with what we call the Mentally Strong Method. And so I knew I was going to be doing that after Reggie's death. And we opened Mentally Strong in 2019 and I was practicing grief. I was on my YouTube channel talking about how do you grieve, and really, you know, I talk about what we call controlled grief, like making the conscious effort to feel the pain, because that's what we don't want to do. We don't want to feel the pain. And so I felt like I was doing a good job. And about 5 years after Reggie's death, I thought, I mean, I could speak publicly on stage. I could, you know, talk about my story. I could clearly communicate the Mentally Strong Method. And December 14th, 2021, so just barely 2 years ago, Maya died a sudden unexpected death in epilepsy in her sleep. I woke up in the morning and she was dead. And I knew it because apparently I screamed it loud, but I didn't know it. Like, I went and I did CPR and I, like, the whole thing of trying to save your child. And so that death, so I've experienced all these different types of grief of, you know, unexpected accident, from a drowning accident to kind of a medical death, right? Like, for years we've been afraid for his death. And then, even though Maya had that same disorder, she was not sick and her father is still alive. And so for her to just die in her sleep, and then now I'm going through anticipatory grief because my husband is on hospice. Mm-hmm. And so I have literally experienced every type of grief. And right now I could say that maybe the anticipatory grief is harder, but it's probably just because what I'm actually going through it right now. And so it's not over. But I remember at about 8 or 9 months after Maya died, I realized that being a grief expert, a psychiatric nurse practitioner, I had not even started grieving Maya's death. I was still in shock 8 months later. And so I was trying to think, like, I want to make some sort of conscious effort to grieve. And as I was doing that, I realized that there was exactly 45 days from the anniversary of my son's death to the anniversary of my daughter's death. And 45 has always been our family number. It was my husband's football number in both high school and college football. It's in every passcode that we have. So 45 is like our number. And then I realized that they had, there was exactly 45 days between their death. And so I decided to grieve every day for 45 days, and it was ugly. It was vulnerable. And I filmed the whole thing, and now we are releasing a grief documentary. The premiere is May 5th. I hope you got your invite. but it is, you know, locally here in Colorado Springs, but we'll be putting it into film festivals and hopefully showing it around the world of how do you actually grieve and stand up or grow from it, rather than you never get over the loss of a child. Like, it's not something you get over. And I don't think you really should get over any grief, right? But then, you know, the spiritual component, we kind of shy away from talking about in, you know, at least professionally in America. Like, it's like, oh, well, you can't proselytize. And so therefore we don't talk about spiritual growth. We don't talk about, and that was the other grief theory. So I talked about attachment theory as the one that resonated with me. The other is continuing bonds, which talks about eternal relationships and I talk about this all the time. Mentally Strong's core value is relationships are a priority, because relationships are the only thing that's eternal. And it's this, and I'm not saying that as a religious plug or like there's a certain thing that you need to believe in. I think we need to start talking about it so that people can progress on their journey, because it's often taught as a black and white. Well, you need to believe this religious group or this religious group, or, and instead of a journey that we are all on, and they talk about this in the continuing bonds theory, like that is the only way to have peace mm-hmm. of losing a child. Like it makes no sense. It's not. And I talk about this in the documentary and in my book, like I have an eternal relationship with my daughter, mostly with my daughter. I can connect with my son and I can even connect with Johnny. But my daughter is like with me all the time. And one of the things that she said to me was, one, time and space is not real. I mean, it's real to you, but it's not real to us. And I had somebody else talk about this in, like, I think it was a medium or some other spiritual person or was talking about, you know, does your family member miss you? Like, mm-hmm. And they gave this great analogy and they're like, just think, let's say your kids are at home and you're going to have a vacation with your husband and you go away on this wonderful vacation. Yes, you miss your kids while you're on this wonderful vacation, but you're having a great time. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel painful, right? Like you miss them. You're looking forward to seeing them again, but it doesn't feel painful like it feels for us. Like it feels painful for us. Mm-hmm. And I can even see you like tearing up a little bit. Like your sister is happy and she is, you know, looking forward to seeing you again and missing you. But it doesn't feel painful like it feels for us. Yeah. And I thought that was a great analogy because we could, I've been on lots of vacations without my kids that I had a really good time.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, thank you for sharing all of that. And I think that I love what you said too about the journey. And that's what I always talk about is it's a journey. And oftentimes I say it's a roller coaster because you have you yes. have this high, you have this low. Like some days, like you, I can talk about my sister till I'm blue in the face. And then other days I just get triggered. And so I think it's, that.
I'm sorry.
No. You know, it shows, but I think that it's real. Like it, you know, the journey of loss and grief. And actually, yeah. I host a grief and loss group every single Monday before my show. And we happen to talk about the different types of loss because mm-hmm. there's so many different types and it may not even be like a human or a pet, right? Like it could be the loss of relationship. It can be the loss of an identity. It can be the prequel to death, right? There's so many different ways that people grieve. And I think it's important for us to understand that. And our experience is going to be so different. Like mine is different from yours and yours is different from mine. And we need to honor that space. It's not the steps. It's not, this is what you may read something that says, hey, you might go through these so you can kind of tell where you might be going a little bit, but also knowing the different theories, like the attachment theory, and then also like which one resonates with you. And there's never, you don't get over it, right? Like, and that's what I hate when people say, well, shouldn't you already be over it by now? Or why are you still grieving? And you have to look at the whole process. And I think what you said was really important, that you didn't even have a chance to grieve. And I often talk about that too, is even for the first year after my sister passed, because my son also had seizures on the day of my sister's celebration of life. And I was just a mom. Like I had to keep going, right? You just keep going because that's what you have to do as a mom. And then I always say that I hit a virtual wall and it was like a brick wall that I slammed into. And I was like, oh, okay, I need to take care of myself. And we forget about that as parents. And I love that you took 45 days and it was messy and it was ugly and you're going to share it with the world to show how different it can be and how important. And that was something also that I heard at one point too, is I was not an emotional person by any means back in the day. Mm-hmm. And you would never have caught me crying on camera, period. But I have learned to embrace my emotions, and it's okay to be vulnerable, and it's okay to share your emotions, and you don't have to apologize. And I say that so many times when people come into my group, is they're like, I'm sorry, like they're so emotional. I'm like, don't apologize. It is okay to not be okay, right? Like we hear that sentence all the time. Right. But I just really appreciate you and sharing your story of the loss of your three children. And I could never imagine how hard it is, especially like the different types of loss. And we're going to go to one more quick sponsored break. Yes. But when we get back, I just want you to share a little bit more information about Mentally Strong specifically, and then also your book and all the things. So we'll be right back after this quick sponsored break.
It's time to make mental health matter. BCC bridges the gap by educating people to support those who are facing a mental health challenge. We aim to ACE, increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education. To empower people and get educated and speak out about mental health and suicide so that we break down the stigma and start saving lives. Let's stop the stigma and normalize the conversation about mental health and suicide through educational classes and community events to reach 1 million people by 2030. And you can help. Go to bccevolution.org. Stay connected. Be a part of our community. Go to bccevolution.org now or email us support@bccevolution.org and make mental health matter.
What if you could transform your mental health journey with just one question? Have you ever wondered what it would be like to prioritize your mental well-being like never before? Well, now's your chance. Introducing Make Mental Health Matter, the show that's changing the conversation about mental wellness. Join us every Monday on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time as we delve into insightful discussions, expert advice, and inspiring stories. Hosted by Kelly Melissa Reinhardt, a warrior for mental health, this show is your guide to breaking down the stigma surrounding mental health and discovering valuable resources to enhance your well-being. So, are you ready to take charge of your mental health journey? Tune in and let's make mental health matter together.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
Calling all authors! Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
It's time to make mental health matter. BCC bridges the gap by educating people to support those who are facing a mental health challenge. We aim to ACE, increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education. To empower people and get educated and speak out about mental health and suicide so that we break down the stigma and start saving lives. Let's stop the stigma and normalize the conversation about mental health and suicide through educational classes and community events to reach 1 million people by 2030. And you can help. Go to bccevolution.org. Stay connected. Be a part of our community. Go to bccevolution.org now or email us support@bccevolution.org and make mental health matter.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And like that, we're back again.
Yeah. Well, and I want to start where you left off, because this, we say this, but I think we need to give a little more attention to it. Like, it's okay to not be okay. And we talk about that, but then we also, there's it's like a seesaw. And if we give a lot of energy to, it's okay to not be okay, I feel like people never get out of not being okay. And I see this as a cultural problem of mental health. People seek mental health treatment and it doesn't work the first time, the second time. And they're like, I'm just not going to be okay. And in the same breath, like, it is okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay there. Mm-hmm. Like, let's, like, figure out what works. And, you know, I have a campaign called Suicide Not an Option. And I actually have people on, you know, the feeds and things like that saying, well, you know, it's my right. I have a right to choose. And I'm like, there's this culture around it, but then there's also this fear around it. We have people who have friends that they know are in a rough spot. And, you know, we've talked about this a little bit. Like, it could be someone who's constantly going to the mental health, saying they're suicidal, and then they're labeled as borderline personality and, you know, kind of labeled as a behavior rather than, you know, a symptom to be treated. And then you have the other side who would never say they're thinking about it. And they are, and they often complete without ever seeing a mental health professional. Like, that is the continuum of suicidality. And we need to start feeling comfortable talking about it. And so I talk about this in all my documents, and I confess it in the grief documentary. I don't think there's a parent who's lost a child that has not considered suicide. I mean, maybe there's a few, but I can tell you, if someone's listening here that has lost a child, it's at least crossed their mind. And, like, the pain is so real. And what I say about the feeling of suicidality, let's start talking about it as a feeling rather than an action. You do not have to act on that feeling. That feeling is... basically, the pain is too much. Like, I can't, whatever your pain is, the pain is too much to go on, right? But that's really just overwhelm, right? And so I always tell myself, and when I was in the thick of it, I had a couple days, you know, where I was feeling that way. And I would say, nope, you're not actually suicidal. You're just tired. Go to bed. Start again tomorrow, right? And I did lots of things. Like, I told you I had struggled with a little bit of depression in my adolescence and young adult. But I thought, you know, I'm going to get some brain scans. I'm going to see what's going on with my brain because I want to do it like educationally, right? And I've taken antidepressants before in my past. Like, I'm not against medication, but I wanted to like see what my brain is doing. And my actual PET scans came up that I was in a trauma response. Like, I had been in a PTSD response. Now that I've confessed it, I'm like, oh yeah, of course I've been in a PTSD response for 17 years, right? And I think about, like, I'm very educated in this field of psychiatry, psychology, neurology, and I still got to that point, mm-hmm. right? So when some, like, let's just start talking about it as it's a point that people get to. And sometimes medication is the answer, but sometimes it's some big journey thing they have to figure out. So suicide, not an option. Let's just start saying that. Let's make that commitment while we feel well, because when you actually feel suicidal, it's really hard to make that statement, right? But if you had promised yourself when you felt well that suicide will never be an action that I complete, not that you'll never feel it, right? Because we all, I talk about this all the time, we all have a threshold mm-hmm. where we will experience true depression. And so I hope you never get to that, right? But if you do have decided prior to that you would never actually complete suicide, that it's just a feeling and, you know, it can be worked through, but it's not always easy. Like, a lot of times people will come, they're suicidal, they get put in the hospital for 3 days, which is traumatic for them. It's not a good experience. And so then they, you know, they start that cycle, and then they don't want to tell people that they're feeling this way because then someone's going to put them in the hospital and that never helps. And so, let's just talk about it as a feeling. I'm not going to do it, but I feel this way. I feel overwhelmed. I feel like giving up. But don't give up. Don't give up.
I love that you pointed that out too, is because I also talk about, like, how do we shift our language from negative to positive? And you saying that just instantly light bulb of, even with the, it's okay to not be okay, we are allowing people to stay in that place, right? Or it's giving them permission to stay there, but we don't want them to stay there. Like, right. Most people want to get better. Most people want to be able to actually get help. Sometimes they just don't know how. And then we, take those phrases and it becomes our identity in a way. So how can we start shifting that language? So I love that you said that. It's also okay to be okay, right? right. So maybe we start that trend instead.
Right.
But I also love that you just,
when you've been through like this horrible grief and trauma, like sometimes you feel guilty that you're okay. Or like, you know, I'll have people say, I don't know how you're living. Well, it's a lot of hard work, but I'm doing it, you know. And changing that language and that dependency, like, our mental health journey is our responsibility. Now, we need support, often need support, and you should get whatever support you need. And if your current support is not working, find other support. Like, you know, there's, you know, hopefully someone in your family or friend group is a support. And if not, try to build that, right? Because we can't just rely on our professional encounters.
There's so many, so much more out there. And that's why I love my show, because I can bring people like you that, although you have this amazing clinic that people can go to, we also have other options. There's holistic, there's friend groups, there's self-care strategies. There's so much more. And I love the point that you said is make sure that you are making a pact that it's just a feeling and you're not going to act on it, because that's really, truly, when you get to that place, it's hard to get out of. And I always say is that we all have suicidal thoughts at one point in time. Just like if you're driving down the street and you're like, I could drive off this cliff, or I could go into oncoming traffic and nobody would know.
You know, saying things like, I don't care. And
I mean, we all have those moments in life. Some of us just have decided that we are not going to take action on them. And if we can get people to a place that they are okay with talking about their feelings and not feeling judged, and just allowing us to be honest, transparent humans like we all, I think, want to be. I mean, could you imagine how incredible this world would be if we're like, I even said to somebody the other day that I want to make a button that says, I'm not okay, but I don't need you to fix me. Right? I just like, today I'm not feeling okay, and that's okay. I don't need you to fix me. Tomorrow's going to be different and I feel great. Right? Like, we have those ups and downs and we don't always need to be fixed, nor do we want to be judged. And so if we can just start having the open conversations about our experiences, about our feelings, making it a feeling, not an action, then, I mean, I feel like we could just change the world for such good. So I would love for you to share with the audience just a little bit. We only have a couple more minutes, but I would love you to share how people can find you if they want to learn more about you and Mentally Strong.
Yeah, mentallystrong.com is kind of the hub where things are. We have a clinic locally in Colorado Springs, takes insurance and things like that. But we also have the Mentally Strong Academy, which I'm really passionate about. Like, this is about educating people to be able to take care of themselves. And sometimes that's choosing to go to a professional counselor. Sometimes it's choosing medication. Sometimes it's choosing, you know, ketamine treatment or TMS treatment. Like, there's lots of, or, you know, or doing supplements and yoga. Like, there's multiple ways to heal and to get better, to be functional. And we try to have all of those things. I have a YouTube channel that I do lots of teaching around all of these different topics. I have a free, my grief course is free right now. We also have, you know, courses on the Mentally Strong Method, and we have Raising Mentally Strong Kids. We have a professional course for licensed professionals that want to use the Mentally Strong Method. So lots of ways to learn about Mentally Strong, but mentallystrong.com.
Cool. And it's down here if you can see it scrolling. So definitely go to mentallystrong.com. And then also, I know you have your own personal website.
Christy Bendikumara has my books and for speaking engagements and things like that. Yeah.
Amazing. So lots of ways to find Dr. B and Mentally Strong. And I just so appreciate you coming on, being vulnerable. And you're going to have to submit your film into my film festival. I would love to have it. Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to be able to come?
I should be able to. Yeah, I added it on my calendar. So
I think I sent you another reminder today.
So. Oh, yay. Sweet. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, y'all. That was another amazing episode of Make Mental Health Matter. I'm like, what the bleh? My mouth is not going faster than my brain. I love when I am able to bring on guests who are able to share their story. They can tell you what they do now, give some tools and information as to how we go about this world. There were so many amazing nuggets this evening with Dr. B, and the research that she's done. I know that a lot, like myself, is I just want to learn more. I just want to get educated. I want to learn more about the brain, why we do what we do, and just understanding that, you know, we all experience things differently. We also have the opportunity to decide that we are human and not We don't have to become the identity of whatever diagnosis or illness or disease that we have. There are professionals, there are holistic resources. There's so many different resources out there that we can really tap into. And I love that she said is that suicidal thoughts, they're a feeling. We all have them at one point in time, but it's just a feeling. It doesn't have to be something that we act upon. And if you need somebody to help shift your perspective, listen to the words that we say. Listen to the words that you use with yourself and with others. And you never know how that's really going to change your whole perspective. So thank you so much for watching, and whatever you do, make sure you come back next week for another incredible guest. They're lining up, and I'm just so excited to be able to share the experiences, the expertise, the knowledge, the stories with you all. And it is now 5 p.m. on E360 TV Mountain Time, and or you can listen on Dream Vision 7 Radio at 5 a.m. or 5 p.m. Mountain Time. All you have to do is say, Alexa, play Dream Vision 7 Radio. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for joining today for the Make Mental Health Matter show. We hope you found today's episode insightful and empowering. Remember, your mental health journey doesn't end here. For more resources, support, and information, visit us online at MakeMentalHealthMatter.org and come back every Monday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Dream Vision 7 Radio. You won't forget to subscribe to our show or follow us on social media to stay connected and continue the conversation, will you? That's right. Together, let's make mental health matter. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.